the latest agriculture news from across the state and the nation, here's Farm City Newsday by AgNet West. Here's your host, Danielle Leal.
Good Monday morning, and thanks for starting off your work week with us here at AgNet West. Well, in a California Farm Bureau Food and Farm News report, agriculture tourism continues to grow, and that's according to the latest U.S. Census of Agriculture. Figures show agritourism revenues more than tripled between 2002 and 2017. A government study says commodities such as grapes, fruit and nut trees, and specialty livestock had a positive impact on tourism revenues. The report also says that agritourism could offer a strategy that helps small and mid-sized farms in particular to bring in additional revenue. Moving on to what's happening in today's show, Brian German is talking with us about the biggest challenges for FSMA compliance. You'll hear the specifics on an upcoming agribusiness management conference that's coming to Fresno. Taylor Hillman has details on why lack of time and money seem to be a challenge when finding chlorpyrifos alternatives. And I'm starting off the show today with news on a recent trade mission to Mexico that had Secretary Perdue talking more than just trade. So let's jump right in. Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue made his way to our southern border neighbor to talk trade and labor. Secretary Perdue just touched down in Washington, D.C. after a successful trade mission to Mexico.
We achieved our goals, obviously generating new export opportunities for our collaborators and cooperators here. We had probably 100 different folks there. We had good trade mission.
In addition to the well over 600 business meetings that took place, Perdue said another important topic was covered.
Certainly, that was one of the primary issues we wanted to talk about was the labor issue and encouraging Mexico to do what we feel like other triangle countries are doing and help pre-certify, particularly those farmers and people in southeastern Mexico, maybe the poorest of the poor there, who would like to come to the U.S. for economic opportunities and a reliable ag labor workforce there to work with us in that way. They seem very interested. Obviously, it would be a win-win situation. Our agricultural producers here need the labor. Hopefully, as we're making progress over modernizing our H-2A rules and hopefully having some legislative input coming soon that can facilitate that. We found Mexico to be very interested in that. Obviously, they're interested in raising the standard of living in southeastern Mexico. So particularly, I pointed out the fact they can come here and earn a good living based on their standard of living here in a seasonal way, and then even go back with the training they learned here and become small stakeholder entrepreneurs in their own country. So
stay tuned as we will hear more of Secretary Perdue's comments later in the show. But for now, here's Brian German with back-to-back agriculture reports.
The funding amount for the upcoming round of livestock methane reduction funding has been significantly reduced in the most recent state budget, and with significant interest in the program, it's a good idea to get started with the application process. The funds are expected to be released by the California Department of Food and Agriculture through the Dairy Digester Research and Development Program and the Alternative Manure Management Program sometime in early 2020. CDFA is expecting applications to be due sometime in March of next year. Because the application period does not provide ample time to put together a quality application within that time frame, those interested in applying are encouraged to begin that process now. Director of Environmental Services for Western United Dairymen, Paul Souza, noted the importance of those incentive programs in achieving California's methane goals.
In the past 2 years, livestock agriculture has received $99 million in each of the last 2 years for methane reduction from manure. And in this year's state budget, it's $34 million. We do have legislation that requires us to reduce manure methane emissions by 40%. And so, you know, it's important that we get some incentives to be able to do that and help California dairies, you know, continue to stay in business while meeting the state's goals for methane reductions.
A recent study has pointed out that time, money, and infrastructure are the three biggest challenges for growers to become compliant with the Food Safety Modernization Act. A needs assessment report released by the National Farmers Union Foundation's Local Food Safety Collaborative discovered there are still significant barriers for FSMA compliance. The report stems from a multi-year effort that incorporates data from the needs assessment survey as well as listening session events. Participants were interested in improving overall food safety, but expressed concern related to financial, labor, and informational resources. The report shows that farmers are still looking for assistance with food safety audits, worker training, water testing, and record keeping. Many of the participants reported having trouble finding experienced and competent trainers. Several of the growers also indicated that financial assistance would prove beneficial for improving access to educational resources and implementing food safety practices. For AgNet West Radio Network, I'm Brian German.
The agriculture industry believes the allocations for the exploration into a chlorpyrifos alternative in California are inadequate. The Department of Pesticide Regulations has dedicated $2.1 million and a task force to finding substitutes for growers who use chlorpyrifos in their farming operation. The chemical is scheduled for deregistration at the end of 2020. California's new state budget has additional funding to the effort, totaling around $5 million, but WAPA's Director of Regulatory Affairs, Jody DeVores, said the investment and timeline are just simply not enough.
So the department set aside $2.1 million into the research of alternatives for the use of chlorpyrifos. And anybody who really knows anything about what it takes to bring a chemistry online knows that there's tens of millions of dollars that go into an individual product. And also with that, there are years of studies and years of tests that need to be done for it to go through the federal process. And then California in its own has its own registration process. So the $2.1 million, it's going to go through and it's going to be put towards research projects, but there really needs to be an evaluation at the state level as to how we can expedite these registrations and making sure that they go through the proper channels, but also making sure that they get to the farmers a little bit quicker, because even right now there's additional regulations through the department that have extended registration processes or evaluations by up to 6 months.
Reporting for AgNet West Radio Network, I'm Taylor Hillman.
This is Farm City News Day by AgNet West. We'll be right back. Welcome back to AgNet West Farm City News Day. We've got more agriculture news right now.
The 38th Annual Agribusiness Management Conference is coming up this week on Thursday, November 14th at the Satellite Student Union at Fresno State. The conference is set to begin at 7:30 that morning and will feature national produce expert Steve Lutz discussing the increasing number of new products in the fruit and vegetable produce industry. The theme for this year's conference is Data, Decisions, and Connectivity and will feature a number of industry experts. The conference serves as an opportunity for the state's agricultural business, economic, political, and research sectors to learn more about the major issues facing agriculture. Attendees will hear presentations on specialty crop, international trade relations and tariffs, highlights from the California Economic Summit, as well as ways that digital transformations can better connect food and agricultural technology providers and users. For AgNet West Radio Network, I'm Brian German.
Well, in today's livestock news, last week the U.S. Meat Export Federation held their annual strategic planning conference in Tucson, Arizona. During a media conference call, USMEF Marketing Director for Mexico, Gerardo Rodriguez, said they're very confident in the recent rebound in U.S. pork exports to Mexico.
In Mexico pork, we are very confident about the rebound that we have been having in the last couple of months after a situation we were facing during last year, with a tariff that it was imposing at 20%, and we were reducing in the market share. But thank you to in the last couple of months, we have been able to rebound that situation. We have been working basically with the processors, which is the one who makes the difference in the volume. This is Mexico. It is a big boning ham market from the U.S. Actually, 55% of the products that are being exported to Mexico is one product, which is boning ham. Now, being said that, we believe Mexico is more than just ham. And that is the reason we're expanding the market into other products and to other channels. We're working for the first time in the convenience stores. So anyway, working with the different companies and processors in Mexico, we have been able to develop new products, and we have been promoting them through the different convenience stores in the country, which the different alternatives that we're offering the consumers about having a healthy, high-protein content products that is coming from the U.S.
But when it comes to U.S. beef moving into Mexico, Rodriguez said things have been flat.
Beef, we have been very flat for Mexico for several situations that is going on. We have a lot of uncertainty with the government, and people are certainly concerned about this new administration that we are having since December. And beef, we haven't been able to expand it at the same pace that we would like to. But we that there is a specific options in products in, on the regions that we have been able to double-digit growth with them, and this is on certain sectors, and this is on the west part of the country, in the state of Sonora, in the state of Chihuahua, even though the state of Tamaulipas, where we have been able to grow because these are new markets that we are expanding beef options, and we are developing new alternatives and new cuts for the consumers in the northern part of the country. In the central part, on the other hand, we are working a lot with supermarket chain in which we are developing alternatives for the housewife that they can cook beef products in a different way. So we want to develop with them, with the retailers, new and more SKUs that it can be optional for the consumers to have an option to buy.
Again, that was USMEF's Gerardo Rodriguez. You can learn more at usmef.org. I'm Randall Wiseman for AgNet West.
U.S. agriculture exports and this country's agriculture trade surplus both took a hit in the 2018 fiscal year. Here's USDA's Gary Crawford with more in this report.
We've got the final ag trade numbers now for all of fiscal year 2019, and all year long from October through September, the same theme just kept repeating.
Exports down and imports up.
USDA international trade economist Cameron Doherty, he said the year ended with September's exports, $10.3 billion, lowest amount of business for any month in fiscal 19, and also
the lowest export month since June of 2016.
Adding it all up for the year, here's what happened in fiscal 19.
Exports were down 7.9 billion dollars from fiscal year 2018 at $135.6 billion. Imports were up $3.4 billion at $130.9 billion. And we had our trade balance down $11.3 billion at $4.6 billion.
The smallest yearly trade surplus in 13 years. Sales of corn, soybeans, and cotton down from the previous year. Wheat sales, though, shooting up by 23%. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Washington.
Again, that was USDA's Gary Crawford speaking with Cameron Doherty. Doherty goes further into detail with the final fiscal year 2019 export numbers for wheat, corn, soybean, and cotton.
Wheat at $6.2 billion, up 23% from fiscal year 2018. Corn was at $9 billion, down 20%. We had soy at $16.9 billion, down 22%. And we had cotton at $6 billion. Down 8% from fiscal year 2018.
This is Farm City News Day by AgNet West. More agriculture news and farm features are coming up. Welcome back to AgNet West Farm City News Day. I'm Danielle Leal. As we heard at the top of the show, Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue just got back from a trade mission to our southern border neighbor in Mexico. Today, we take a listen into a media call where Secretary Perdue addressed the mission and other topics covered during his trip.
Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you all for joining us. I just landed from Mexico City a little over an hour ago, and I thought we had a very successful trade mission down there. We achieved our goals, obviously generating new export opportunities for our collaborators and cooperators here. We had probably 100 different folks there from 14 different states, different directors, secretaries of agriculture, as well as 28 different businesses there. And we had good trade mission. I think about 600 business-to-business meetings there going on. So helped to generate new export opportunities. Certainly, we USMCA came up. Obviously, Mexico, as we are anxious to have that ratified here. They've already done their work, as you know, and they're anxious for us to complete our task here, and we discussed that as well. And certainly just business is done on a person-to-person basis, and really just building on the trust relationship that we have with our neighbors to the south. It was good to visit with Secretary Villalobos again. I invited him again to the Ag Outlook Forum, and he has accepted, and we hope to have what we're calling the Western Hemisphere Ag 5 here at the Ag Outlook Forum, our colleagues from Canada, Brazil, and Argentina, where we can continue to strategize over Western Hemisphere agricultural issues. But we had a good meeting with our ambassador. I was very impressed with Ambassador Landau as a very distinguished attorney. highly decorated Harvard graduate, but has a real passion for agriculture. It was very demonstrated that way, and he had already knew a lot about it and was on top of it, but he was a great presence, and I think it'll be a big help. Naturally, in all these trade missions, you have an opening plenary session with all of our cooperators, and we had a good session there. They got their instructions regarding the different meetings and things like that. And then we had a formal bilateral with Secretary Villalobos and his whole staff. It appeared there were several there where we discussed the various issues of issues between us, such as biotech issues and things like that. And then we had lunch with the president's chief of staff, Mr. Alfonso Romo. And he is an accomplished scientist as well. And I felt very good making that relationship with him. And I think we have an avenue in the president's office over issues in that way. Then we had a little fun in the afternoon with a NFL promotion event, playing kids with flag football there. It was sort of a highlighting an American kind of tailgate party with healthy foods and a lot of entertainment around a field. And then I got to play around with some kids in the flag football. I had no idea that American football was as popular as it is in Mexico, but they've got over 3 to 4 million Mexican kids playing American flag football. And so we had a little opportunity to visit with them, and then concluded last night with a reception at the ambassador's house where all the our people and others came and had a chance to fellowship there and talk about their plans and what they were hoping to accomplish again in the next day or two. So that's kind of what we did. Was a successful meeting, and I'd be happy to address, answer any questions that you may have regarding our trip.
Our first question of the day belongs to Heather Scott of AFP. Heather, good afternoon.
Thanks for taking the call, Mr. Secretary. First, I just have to point out that if you're having healthy food, it's not an American tailgate.
I felt the same way, but we're trying to change the culture a little bit.
Never had healthy food at a tailgate. Anyway, I wonder if in your conversations, especially with the minister, the issue of immigration and its impact on agriculture came up, and have you, you know, what are you hearing from farmers in the U.S. about the impact of immigrants and their ability to get their harvest in, and if it's raising costs in the sector, labor costs?
Certainly, that was one of the primary issues we wanted to talk about, was the labor issue, and encouraging Mexico to do what we feel like other triangle countries are doing and help to pre-certify, particularly those farmers and people in southeastern Mexico, maybe the poorest of the poor there, who would like to come to the U.S. for economic opportunities and a reliable ag labor workforce there to work with us in that way. They seem very interested in that, and obviously it would be a win-win situation. Our agricultural producers here need the labor, and hopefully as we're making progress over modernizing our H-2A rules and hopefully having some legislative input coming soon that can facilitate that. And we found Mexico to be very interested in that. Obviously, they're interested in raising the standard of living in southeastern Mexico particularly. I pointed out the fact they can come here and earn a good living based on their standard of living here in a seasonal way, and then even go back with the training that they've learned.
Lines P.J. Huffstetter of Reuters News has the next question for the Secretary. P.J., good afternoon.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, Secretary Perdue. Just a couple of quick questions to follow up on the labor question. What were some of the key sticking points, if there were any, in your discussions over labor when you guys were down in Mexico?
There really weren't any sticking questions. Well, frankly, we both agreed that a modernized H-2A program where they help to pre-certify people who are qualified to come here and help to train those workers and help to teach them what is expected in a more formal way will allow our producers here in the U.S. to have a pool of people from which to draw from. We've had some issues this year over where recruiters have been caught into having people pay, and there have been some difficulties with the State Department over some recruiters that may not have been playing by the rules. This would eliminate that. I think they like that idea in being able to participate in that, to pre-certify and identify the people, maybe those folks that they deem to need it the most, and allow that to happen. So we felt like that was a good result, and I don't know that we really found any sticking points. The benefit of the win-win situation that I see is that they and I feel like it would also help to resolve the, as they deem, the irregular immigration or illegal immigration that we've been plagued by having an avenue for these people to come in a legitimate government-to-government type of certified program.
This is Farm City News Day by AgNet West. We'll have more of the day's agriculture news in just a moment. And remember, you can always get the latest agriculture news from across the state and the nation at our website at www.agnetwest.com. We'll be right back. Welcome back to AgNet West Farm City News Day. We've got more agriculture news right now. New research shows that U.S. consumers spend less on groceries than any other nation. Michael Clements has the report.
A new analysis by the American Farm Bureau Federation shows the United States has the most affordable food supply. Megan Nelson, AFBF economic analyst, researched global food prices and found Americans enjoy the most affordable overall price for food at home.
Americans actually have the most affordable basket of groceries. The amount of money that each individual spends out of their disposable income on food is about 4.8%. That was from 2017. That's substantially lower than a lot of other areas.
Nelson says people in low-income countries must spend much more of their household budget on food than those in high-income countries.
For high-income countries, we're looking at 4 to 6 to maybe 8% of their total disposable income being spent on food. But then if you go into more low-income countries, you're seeing over 50% of their household budget spent on food. And that has been true since the 1800s.
Nelson says it's important agricultural trade and policy help reduce global food price volatility.
The importance of keeping price predictable for not only farmers but all individuals in these low-income countries, it's paramount. We really need to be able to stabilize markets abroad and build up trading partners instead of having unstable trade flow.
Michael Clements, Washington.
Today is Veterans Day, and it's been observed in a variety of different forms from the past 100 years. Here's USDA's Gary Crawford with more.
World War I. Over 16 million people died in the 4 years of fighting, which ended in 1918 with an armistice at
the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month. That was a very symbolic moment.
Agriculture Department economist and history expert Ann Efland. Then let's go 1 year after that moment.
One way which we can show our appreciation.
Hard to make that out. President Woodrow Wilson is declaring November 11th, 1919 as Armistice Day 100 years ago.
And it became an annual celebration, and Congress finally passed a resolution to make it an official holiday in 1938.
It stayed as Armistice Day for another 16 years.
And then in 1954, it was renamed Veterans Day at the request of many veterans groups.
Groups who made a big fuss when Congress in 1968 made it one of the Monday national holidays. So in 78, Veterans Day was back to November 11th as it was in its beginning 100 years ago. Gary Crawford, U.S. Department of Agriculture, Washington.
And now for a recap of one of today's top stories.
A recent study has pointed out that time, money, and infrastructure are the three biggest challenges for growers to become compliant with the Food Safety Modernization Act. A needs assessment report released by the National Farmers Union Foundation's Local Food Safety Collaborative discovered there are still significant barriers for FSMA compliance. The report stems from a multi-year effort that incorporates data from the needs assessment survey as well as listening session events. Participants were interested in improving overall food safety, but expressed concern related to financial, labor, and informational resources. The report shows that farmers are still looking for assistance with food safety audits, worker training, water testing, and record keeping. Many of the participants reported having trouble finding experienced and competent trainers. Several of the growers also indicated that financial assistance would prove beneficial for improving access to educational resources and implementing food safety practices. For AgNet West Radio Network, I'm Brian German.
To get more information on the topics you heard today, visit AgNet West online at agnetwest.com. You can follow AgNet West on Twitter and Facebook with @AgNetWest. Follow Brian German with @BrianAgNetWest, Danielle Leal with @DLealAgNetWest, and Taylor Hillman with @TheManOfTheHill. This has been Farm City Newsday by AgNet West.